leading scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. We're included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And greetings from Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, Editor-in-Chief. We're closing in on Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. I hope you have a time to have a little peace to yourself and reflect and focus on your family and friends and loved ones. We need more of that in this world today, for sure. But in many families, it's going to cause a lot of arguments, I'm afraid, because of all of the political divide. Do the best you can. Learn how to bite your tongue. Love is more important than division. The first story we have up today makes us think back to the book Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. It was written in 1932. If you've never read Brave New World, you should. It was an absolutely seminal book back in those days. I do believe Aldous Huxley was looking at technocracy at that time, as it was housed at Columbia University in New York. And the technocracy movement was quite widespread with media coverage, and a lot of people in England and Europe were following technocracy like a hawk during those days. I believe it contributed to the production of this book, Brave New World. The title of this story is Scientists, of course, you know scientists are behind this one. Artificial wombs could replace women. That's right. Artificial wombs could replace women. In other words, women have wombs in order to have children. But if scientists can create an artificial womb, well, there will be no more need for women to have children. Maybe that would make some women happy. I think it would make some women completely unhappy. I wrote at the top of this article, technocrats invent because they can, not because there is a pressing need to do so. This is a precursor to incubator reproduction, as described in Huxley's 1932 book, Brave New World. And the story is already being linked to gay men being able to, quote, have babies. No woman needed, just an incubator. This article states, the idea of growing babies outside the body has inspired novels and movies for decades. Now, research groups around the world are exploring the possibility of artificial gestation. For instance, one group successfully grew a lamb in an artificial womb for 4 weeks. Australian researchers have also experimented with artificial gestation for lambs and sharks. And in recent weeks, researchers in the Netherlands have received 2.9 million euros to develop a prototype for gestating premature babies. So it's important to consider some of the ethical issues this technology might bring. Growing a baby outside the womb is known as ectogenesis or exogenesis. And we're already using a form of it. When premature infants are transferred to humidicribs to allow their development in a neonatal unit, that's partial ectogenesis. But an artificial womb could extend the period a fetus could be gestated outside the body. Eventually, we might be able to do away with human wombs altogether. This may sound far-fetched, but many scientists working in reproductive biotechnology believe that with the necessary scientific and legal support, full ectogenesis is a real possibility for the future. An artificial womb would need an outer shell or chamber, that's somewhere to implant the embryo and protect it as it grows. So far, animal experiments have used acrylic tanks, plastic bags, and uterine tissues removed from an organism and artificially kept alive. An artificial womb would also need a synthetic replacement for amniotic fluid, a shock absorber, in the womb during natural pregnancy. And finally, there would have to be a way to exchange oxygen and nutrients, so oxygen and nutrients and carbon dioxide and waste products out. In other words, researchers would have to build an artificial placenta. Animal experiments have used complex catheter and pump systems, but there are plans to use a mini version of an extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, a technique that allows blood to be oxygenated outside the body. Once these are in place, artificial gestation could one day become as common as IVF is today, a technique considered revolutionary a few decades ago. But just as in the case of IVF, there are many who are concerned about what this new realm of reproductive medicine might mean for the future of creating a family. So what are some of the ethical considerations? Well, the main discussion about artificial wombs has focused on their potential benefit in increasing the survival rate of extremely premature babies. Currently, those born earlier than 22 weeks gestation have little to no hope of survival, and those born at 23 weeks are likely to suffer a range of disabilities. Using a sealed biobag, which mimics the maternal womb, might help extremely premature babies survive and improve the quality of life. This emerging reproductive technology may allow women who are infertile, either due to physiological or social reasons, with the chance of having a child. It may also offer opportunities for transgender women and other women born without a uterus or those who have lost their uterus due to cancer, injury, or medical conditions to have children. Similarly, it could allow single men and gay male couples to become parents without needing a surrogate. Will this lead to a broader discussion about gender roles and equality in reproduction? Will it remove potential risks and expectations of pregnancy and childbirth currently only affecting women? Will this eliminate commercial surrogacy? Equally, artificial wombs could help fertile women who, for health reasons or personal reasons, chose not to be pregnant. It would allow those whose career choices, medication, or lifestyle might otherwise expose a developing fetus to malformation or abnormality. If you think about this story for just a minute, you probably will come up with a lot of issues and problems and reasons that this is a bad idea. The Siamese twin that would go along with this, no pun intended, would be to use genetic modification tools like the new CRISPR technology to edit the human genome before the child is raised in an artificial womb. This is exactly what Aldous Huxley wrote about in his book, Brave New World. They were able to purposely create different class levels of people, those that are extremely smart and those that are dumber than a box of rocks. The grunts or the slaves were the ones who did all the manual labor, and the elite ones who were bred to be smarter and quicker and more agile, they had all the privilege. Well, you can read this story and decide for yourself. The next story, again, has to do with scientists and engineers concerning artificial intelligence. The title of this story is AI Reads Your Mind and Creates a Video of Your Thoughts. I wrote here, scientists claim that AI can learn what you are thinking by analyzing brain impulses and then reproduce the image on a video. Rudimentary as it is, it could break down the most private enclave of humanity, that is, your personal thoughts. The article states a mind-reading tool powered by artificial intelligence has produced a staggering video of human thoughts in real time. Russian researchers trained the program to guess what people are thinking based on their brain waves. They trained the AI by using clips of different objects and the brainwave activity of participants watching them. Participants were then shown clips of nature scenes, people on jet skis, and human expressions. AI then recreated videos using an electrocephalogram, or EEG cap, reports New Scientist. Out of 234 attempts, 210 were successfully categorized by the video. Colors and large shapes were deemed the most successful, the report adds, but human faces were harder to recreate, with many distorted, researchers said. The video first surfaced last month. But since then, Victor Sharmus at the University of Arizona commented on the video and said, "We are still only looking at the surface of human thought." He said, quote, "What we are currently seeing is a caricature of human experience, but nothing remotely resembling an accurate recreation." Dr. Ian Pearson, a futurologist and ex-cybernetics engineer, told us, quote, "I would think in a lab we're probably a decade or 15 years away from that technology. I don't think it will be a long time after that before police start using it in interrogations, getting somebody in for questioning." Instead of a police officer asking questions, they'll stick a helmet on you to decide what's going on in your mind. Oh, it's a brave new world indeed. There will be a time in the future, if the world lasts that long, that there will be no private space left for humans. Everybody will know what everybody else is thinking. Nothing will be hidden. My guess is it will be a very, very dystopian world at that point. This is one of the great risks and dangers of advanced technology. Once it gets started, there's no stopping. And the people that do the inventing, the scientists and the engineers, have no ability to restrain themselves from inventing things that ultimately could destroy the human condition. I guess they need a little more common sense. The last story indeed is earth-shaking, at least to me, because I've studied the Trilateral Commission for the last 40 years. Myself and Professor Anthony Sutton, back in the late 1970s, wrote the definitive book on the Trilateral Commission called Trilaterals Over Washington in 2 volumes. It sold enough books to be considered on the New York Times bestseller list. Of course, it never was, but it could have been by number. It should have been. But we wrote about the Trilateral Commission, its founding, the people in it, what their plans were, and readers of Technocracy News will know that it was the Trilateral Commission that brought technocracy back onto the world stage in the form of what they called their new international economic order. The commission, of course, was founded by David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski, and it drew members from 3 regions, Japan, Europe, and North America. That's why it was called the Trilateral Commission. And one of the early organizations that was associated with this group was the Atlantic Council. We documented very carefully back in the 70s the relationship of the Atlantic Council to the Trilateral Commission. And those links have remained in place all these years since. The title of this story is Trilateral Commission Links Found with Impeachment Inquiry. As this whole impeachment debacle has gone forward, by the way, I swore I would not write about it, that I would not get involved with this fray, but this article was just too tempting because finally, the Trilateral Commission is seen at least in the periphery of the impeachment inquiry, and that to me is extremely significant. I wrote at the top of this, the Atlantic Council has been connected to the impeachment inquiry through a common contact with Burisma Holdings and the supposed whistleblower, Eric Ciaramella. The council's board is riddled with members of the Trilateral Commission. The Atlantic Council has been closely linked to the Trilateral Commission since its founding in 1973 by David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski. There have always been a preponderance of commission members on the council's board of directors. Some prominent and recognizable names include today Michael Chertoff, Paula Dobriansky, Wolfgang Ischinger, Henry Kissinger, Joseph Nye, Rajiv Shah, who, by the way, is the president of the Rockefeller Foundation, and Wendy Sherman, among others. The Trilateral Commission is the locus of the deep state and has always managed to fly under the radar of scrutiny. Wherever and whenever commission members pop up, you can be sure you are close to the center of globalization. This article was written and published in the New American Magazine, and it states, a second staffer for Representative Adam Schiff, Democrat from California, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, has been discovered to have ties to the Atlantic Council, a think tank that receives funding from and works in partnership with Burisma Holdings, the Ukrainian natural gas company whose relationship with Hunter and Joe Biden forms the basis of the current impeachment probe into President Trump. The staffer, Sean Misko, reportedly joined Schiff's staff at the House Intelligence Committee in August, the same month that the whistleblower's complaint was filed after first reportedly interfacing with a Schiff staffer. Misko has been described as being, quote, close friends with Eric Ciaramella, the CIA operative believed to be the whistleblower. In 2015, Misko was a year-long Millennium Fellow at the Burisma-financed Atlantic Council, making him the second Schiff staffer who has worked or currently works for that think tank. The other staffer, Thomas Eager, is presently a fellow at the Atlantic Council's Eurasia Congressional Fellowship, a program that the organization's website says, quote, educates congressional staff on current events in the Eurasia region. In 2017, Burisma signed a cooperative agreement with the council specifically to sponsor the Eurasia Center, where Eger is a fellow. Eger has maintained a close relationship with the Atlantic Council, writing Ukraine policy pieces with the think tank's director and articles published by the council's publications. According to Breitbart, Eger took an Atlantic Council-organized trip to Ukraine in August, during which he held a meeting with acting U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine, Bill Taylor, who is a key witness in the Democrats' impeachment probe. That trip culminated in a meeting with former Ukrainian president, the man whom former Vice President Joe Biden convinced to fire prosecutor Viktor Shokin, who was investigating Burisma, on the threat of withholding $1 billion in U.S. loan guarantees. In addition to being a member of the Atlantic Council, Misko has been a donor to the think tank, giving $999 in 2016. Founded in 1961, the Washington, D.C.-based Atlantic Council is similar to the Globalist Council on Foreign Relations, a mechanism by which the globalist establishment staffs key positions in government and influences decision-makers. The council was founded with the goal of fostering greater integration between North America and Europe. Burisma is far from the only eyebrow-raising source of funding for the Atlantic Council. Other financing groups from the world of the globalist elite include the Rockefeller Foundation, Google, and George Soros' Open Society Foundation. Another donor? Perkins Coie, the law firm that represented both the Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee, and that reportedly helped enlist the help of the firm CrowdStrike with the DNC server, which was allegedly hacked. It was also Perkins Coie that paid the opposition research firm Fusion GPS to produce the salacious Trump dossier authored by former British spy Christopher Steele. The Washington Examiner reported that Misko is close friends with Eric Ciaramella and shares a bro-like relationship with him. Well, this indeed is a must-read story. The evidence is obviously a little bit circumstantial, but now two staffers on Representative Adam Schiff's staff have direct connections to the Atlantic Council. This is beyond coincidence. And I think there's a lot more that meets the eye here. The deep state is indeed the puppet master behind all that's going on in the House of Representatives today. And now, for the first time, it's been much more directly linked towards members of the Trilateral Commission and at least people who are friendly with the Trilateral Commission, who in any case are at the very core of the deep state in America. I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll see you next time.